sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Fed signals maybe a limited QE. Japan's exports disappoint badly, and Apple hits a new high and is now the biggest company ever in the world by market cap. Well, we got Frank Curzio here with us today and lots to talk about when it comes to some individual stocks and markets. All this and much more on episode number 277 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey, how are you? Coming up on Labor Day soon. The dog days of the summer almost over. Back to school is happening down here, at least in Florida. And you know what? There's lots to talk about because, boy, oh boy, things change and get maneuvered and the information seems to become more and more challenging to understand on a daily basis. This is Andrew Horowitz, and again, I do thank you so much for listening in. Hopefully, you're referring your friends to listen in. If you haven't done so, maybe it's a good time to get them to listen to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Also have the DH Unplugged, where I talk with John C. Dvorak on a weekly basis, and that's kind of entertaining. If you haven't heard that, it's a much different format than when we discuss here. Here, we're really focused on investing and the economy and worldwide events. There, kind of anything goes. Yeah, we still have a focus on investments, but, you know, it's a whole different discussion over there. But I have a few things before we get to Frank to talk to you about. We talk about that the Fed has signaled, at least by the headlines, that, boy, they're really ready to do something. The fact of the matter is the Fed knows, they've said it, they've broadcasted it, that they know that the effects of another round of quantitative easing isn't going to have the same effects as the first and much more limited than the second. But at the same time, they also realize that there's a gridlock in Washington where the Congress now has their lowest rating on history. And there's a gridlock. There's just nothing going on. They have things to deal with like the fiscal cliff. Forget about trying to fix any other kind of fiscal level of inequity. They are on vacation. When they get back, they're really going to be focusing on a few things that, well, unless anything gets in the way, like another crazy whale situation like JP Morgan, MF Global, or whatever, the fact is that they have their hands full. And on top of it, they can't make a decision to save their lives anyway. So what we're dealing with right now is really only monetary policy that can do any kind of stimulus for any kind of fix for the situation. But already we have yields at an all-time low or record low, close to it. How much more is it going to help? I'll tell you something what I think. I think that the Fed is doing what they can because they realize that they need to be a part of also fixing the European situation. If you realize that they talk about quantitative easing, they talk about new stimulus, it knocks the dollar down significantly and raises the euro, which just vaulted higher over a couple of days. Yeah, it took also oil prices, gold prices, silver prices up. But the fact of the matter is that the stable euro and the ability to keep that euro at a decent level is something that is watched very closely. And even though we see that at the same time, yeah, bond yields have been better over there, there's been a lot of backstepping by the ECB and by Europe on the idea that they're going to do some kind of a unlimited bond buying or at least have a cap on bonds, which is bond yields, which is interesting. But Germany has been fighting it, and now we have the Greece situation where the Troika is going to be visiting and going over the books of Greece, and I'm sure they'll find all sorts of great things are happening with the economy. Not. The truth is that Greece is asking for an extension of time to pay off its debt. They look like they just came out with a conversation that they're doing another austerity package of about 11 $1 billion. Now, when Samaras came in, you remember one of the big things that he came in with was the pledge that they weren't going to have this austerity. They were going to free up the economy. Can't be done. They're in such a mess over there that the question still remains, not if, but when is it going to be a point where Greece is not going to continue to be part of the Eurozone? That has been weighing on the backdrop of the euro, and over the last number of days has been picking up some steam, because even though there is some better things happening in the U.S. here, and clearly we've seen the markets in Europe pick up very dramatically after the speeches and the conversations and rhetoric by the ECB, they didn't solve anything, and they didn't have a plan. There was nothing concrete more than pledges. And I got to tell you, we've seen more and more pledges lately that have had absolutely no effect, because the truth of the matter is that there's nothing that backs it up. Oil hits 95 and President Obama comes out with, we're going to release the strategic oil reserves. Oh, come on. Oil then was $3 higher after that. We know that that's not something you're going to do, and it's not going to have an effect even if you do. So, you know, it'd be very nice, although it's not going to happen, if they would just shut up a little bit. Stop talking so much and let markets do their thing. Japan has been just talking almost on a daily basis how they're going to defend the yen, and how the yen has been moving too high, and they're going to use all their power and firepower to make sure the yen doesn't move any higher. You know, Sony is at a 1980s low on the price of their stock. Japanese market has really not recovered at all. And on top of that, when you look at the overall the stocks underneath it, the effect of a high yen that went from about 300 down to 70 has just killed the country. And now that there's a slowdown in Europe and certain areas in Asia, there, if you saw the export numbers that came out a couple of days ago, they were horrible. They missed so dramatically, and their deficit, surplus deficit on import export went up a few $100 billion. And this is the same thing we just saw in China. China was supposed to have a 7% year-over-year expansion of exports. It came in at 1%. 1%. Shanghai Index is at a 2009 low. So there's a very different kind of situation that's going on. And a lot of it has to do with, in Asia, they're trying to, in some countries, trying to slow down their economies because of inflation and real estate price gotten out of control, bad bank debt, bad loans, all this other thing. And here, you know, we're kind of like open spigot to, you know, just continuing enormous amounts of debt, stimulus, and anything else goes. They talked about in the recent Fed minutes how that traditional measures have not done the trick, and now they're going to come up with something else. I don't know what that is. I really don't. Maybe this is going to start sending us all checks. That'd be great. Probably be better use of the trillions of dollars that they've been buying up in bonds, right? Let's just segue over to Apple for a second. Apple hits a new high. There's a great deal of anticipation. I must tell you, we missed out on this last move. Apple, for the first time in a long while, came off our list of very highly screened stocks because they missed on margins and on growth. And that was confirmed with the earnings call. And on top of that, it was confirmed with the management, who said and suggested that they're going to have a real tough outlook. And it came off. Okay, so we sold it. We bought a few times, sold a few times. But this last run-up of, that 8, 10% would have been very nice. And you can't win them all, I guess. But the truth is that Apple is just an amazing company. And clearly they are, affecting a lot of things on when it comes to the world of PCs and tablets, et cetera, and that whole environment of how we deal with things like communication and consumption of entertainment has changed forever. Pretty interesting. The last thing I want to talk about before we get to, well, a couple things I want to talk about before we get to Frank, is if hopefully you've been, you looked at the last week, if you didn't notice, I talked about the whole VIX and the VIX, and I talked about the VIX, and you got to be near the VIX. And the VIX has gone from about 1350 to about 1520, or a little bit more, a little less. It kind of moves around a bit. But, I suggested that you look at some of the ETFs, which I don't like. I also suggested you look at the options on that, and that could have possibly thrown off a really nice return. I'll also share with you that I had mentioned my whole idea about the poultry companies And if you hadn't had an opportunity to take a look at what's going on there, you know, between Sanderson Farms and Tyson Foods, and they've just been dynamite. Now, next week, we're going to see earnings from Sanderson, and there's very low expectations because of the high price of corn, feed, et cetera, and all that's going on. But the fact is that they're already talking about passing on cost to the next level. And, you know, I don't have high expectations, but I think that's part of the beauty behind it. The low expectations oftentimes have seen a dramatic jump in a stock. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. Tyson disappointed. It came out with earnings disappointed and guided lower, but stock was about 7% lower the next day for a little while, then just popped higher and has been going higher ever since. But the fact is that everything cycles, right? Some of the worst things, the best things, the best things, the worst things. Look at steel, look at the aluminum companies, just look at what happens, and it depends on the timing of the economic cycle. It depends on the outlook. But is corn going to stay this high forever? I mean, I think there's going to be some constraints on the use of ethanol potentially in the future. One of the things you need to know, I think about close to 40% of the corn crop is used to make ethanol. Can you imagine how much lower price would be on corn if, in fact, they didn't use it for that energy source? And hopefully somebody in Washington is going to realize, you know, maybe this isn't the best idea in the world. Maybe we shouldn't be using a food staple for energy, because that, you know, I would personally rather have the staple, the food, the important ingredient that's used in so many different things, than a little bit cheaper gas. And when I have the problems that I have now that affect so many different things with corn, you know, it's not just corn, like corn on the cob. It's the whole feed industry. It's oils. Cooking oils. There's so many different things, cornstarch, so many things that are made with corn. And now that we have the drought, something has to be done. So, but I want you to take a look at those stocks, Sanderson, SAFM, Tyson, TSN, and also PPC. Just look at those. Interesting. Also look at Questcor, QCOR, been very volatile, but interesting pharmaceutical that has great opportunity and has been really selling very well. And if it does break out from these kind of levels, it could be interesting to look at. So just kind of take a look, sneak around, see what's happening with those. But I do think that there are, you know, if you're disciplined enough to look at the fundamentals that are high quality and the technicals, that's something that could really be beneficial to you. That's what we do. You know, you don't always get it right, but that's what we do here. We have a select list, and we kind of stick to that for a core. And then you go out and you find some other things that may be very interesting in terms of technicals. And that's how we manage money over here at Horowitz & Company. So anyway, if you want to check out some of the things that we do, the global allocations, $500,000 minimum. And we manage that in an institutional manner with a lot of institutional type of mutual funds, ETFs, and things of that nature. Global allocations. And then we have the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, $50,000 minimum. Just go to the website, click on the little button there, and just you can put your information in. And you'll see a video and all that. I want to get to two pieces of email that I got in. The first one asked me about short interest ratio, because we talk about that a lot with trigger points, and that, you know, when you see a stock that has a lot of short interest ratio or days to cover, that could be something interesting to look at. And the question was, what is it? Well, here's the deal. If we have a stock that has a short interest ratio or days to cover of 5, the number 5, that means that the average volume on a 5-day basis of what the stock trades has to trade to cover all of the shorts. So the shorts would actually have to go out and do 5 times the volume of the daily. Now think about what that can mean for a stock moving. Now if you have a very low short interest, well, maybe you're not going to get a short squeeze. But if you have something like a 10-day to cover on a stock, and maybe it's not a stock that has an extremely liquid style of trading, and all of a sudden it gets some kind of good news or breaks out above a resistance level, think about the potential for all those shorts coming in, wanting to cover their positions, get out, and what it does to the stock. That's when you see those kind of parabolic moves in a day or two or three. And basically the short interest ratio gives us an indication of how many days of average volume it would take to cover the entire outstanding short positions. So hopefully that helps. There's another email that came in from David. He says, "Hi, my name's David, and I'm on again, off again listener. He currently works for a Department of Labor in a particular state in the appeals branch. And he says the reason why he's emailing me is that he's not really heard any discussion on the impact of the disaster that the federal UEC, which is the Emergency Unemployment Compensation, extended benefits, will have if they run out. And the impact on our economy when this monstrosity finally comes to an end. More precisely, the amount of recipients currently receiving extended unemployment benefits and the dependency cycle created through the artificial stabilization this creates as EUC as it's been going on for 4 years now. You know, we've talked about this, and the question is, are they going to extend it again? Because if you think about all the people coming off the payrolls and that can't get jobs, at least, you know, in theory, and the fact that these kind of benefits don't really encourage people going out and actively looking for jobs, it's a very bad situation. You know, my hope, David, is that by the time it runs out, and when it does run out, people will pick up their entrepreneurial spirit and they will actually figure out a way to get a job rather than depending on government subsidies and someone for, you know, giving them money to not work. But yeah, I do agree with you also that the money that's coming in on the extended benefits has been helping and has been doing a lot to stabilize retail sales and the economy. But I wouldn't put it past these politicians to do something else and extend it in the future because, unfortunately, that's all they know. Now, before we get to Frank, I want to mention GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a great service you have to check out. It's free for 30 days just by doing a few things that I'm about to tell you, okay? And, you know, GoToMeeting is neat because you can do some work with your colleagues or your family. And sometimes it's very difficult to meet one-on-one with somebody. I mean, I have some people that I deal with in different states, different countries. And it's so convenient just to work kind of side by side with them virtually. And with GoToMeeting by Citrix, it takes just a webcam and a click to collaborate in a group. You got the HD video. You can even do it from an iPad. And you can look at your people you're talking to eye to eye. Plus, it's so easy to use. What I want you to do is you can go get your 30-day free trial. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST. GoToMeeting.com. Try it free. Check it out. And a favorite, of course, of yours and mine is our guest, Frank Curzio. He writes for Stansberry Research, and he does a lot of work with the fundamentals of companies, gets down and dirty and kind of rolls up his sleeves to understand what's happening with the company, the opportunity, the debt, the various ratios. And I wanted to talk to him about some of the things that we have going on these days, some of the discussion I've had with him off the air, and come up with some kind of maybe an outlook and plan. So, Frank, how are you doing, my friend?
Things are great, man. How's it going, bud?
Everything is well. I know that your family is growing, and I know that your readership has been just off the charts. You're doing a great job over there. Seriously.
I appreciate it. I really do work hard to keep as many readers, and I think that the biggest part is just, you know, we all make mistakes in this market, and just to, you know, just to go over the mistakes and how you make them. And, you know, everybody has their winners. It seems like a lot of people talk about their winners, but if you want to be in this business for 10, 20, 30 years, you got to talk about everything. So it's been working good, and the subscriber base has been building. I appreciate it.
No problem. All right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that have gone on in the last week or so have really been interesting to me. You know, on Wednesday, we had the Fed minutes come out, and the markets were off for most of the day, and there was some gloom about this whole issue with Greece, all the stuff that's going on, okay? And then the Fed comes out with their minutes, and they had some commentary in there that made it look like, oh, some kind of QE is going to be happening. So what was your take on that?
You know, I don't know if QE is actually going to happen. I think they're just using it as a tool because it's very powerful when you say it. It's another thing if you do it. I mean, they got more Operation Twist and stuff like that. But I don't know if they necessarily have to do it because right now, you know, the economic data hasn't been great, but it's definitely turned upward in three different categories. We talked about this off air about retail sales, how, you know, they're coming off a poor number, but every component within retail sales, if you look at furniture, equipment, sporting goods, autos, all of them went up. And to put that in perspective, it's the first time it happened since like July 2005. Again, coming off weak numbers, but we also got a really good unemployment report. You know, and the bulls always quick to, you know, debate against if the numbers are terrible and vice versa with the bears if the numbers, you know. But looking at those numbers, they were absolutely fantastic. I thought much better. The expectations were low, And then you have the housing market. I mean, even Toll Brothers came out last week. They reported great earnings. The stock was 13. I think it's like $33 now. Clear signs, you know, that housing is definitely rebounding, not to the point that, you know, we're in place close to 2006, but we're rebounding. We're definitely rebounding. Prices are actually going up in a lot of the key areas. So you're looking at that from an economic point of view. And if that continues and we see that momentum, again, we're growing at less than 1%. If we can go to 2%, I think you could see, especially a lot of cyclical companies do well. So I think they're on hold. It's a powerful tool to say that they're going to do some kind of stimulus. But right now, if economic data continues and we see that momentum continue, like we did last year, a little bit later during this time, I think we could see stocks actually continue to go higher.
Well, let me read. I saved this all week because I wanted to talk to you about this. From the Federal Open Market Committee, they had their minutes they put out. On page 4, they talk about, let me just kind of read this to you. Several factors influenced developments in the financial market since the time of the June FOMC meeting. Generally weaker than expected economic data in the United States, concerns about the fiscal and banking situation in the euro area, and the outlook for global economic growth weighed on investor sentiment. Again, they're focusing on markets here, right? However, the effects of these factors were offset to some extent by actual and expected easing of monetary policy in the United States and abroad, and by better than anticipated profits in some of the S&P 500 firms. So, you know, I mean, what we're saying here, Frank, is that the Fed know, obviously, they know the power they have just to dangle the potential for monetary easing in front of investors. And, you know, the old saying, two things, don't fight the tape, don't fight the Fed. You know, I'd rather fight the tape than fight the Fed, right? If you're going to do something, if you have a choice. But it is clear that there is so much rhetoric going on around the world. Do we buy into this?
I'm going to be honest with you, and I know it's going to be a lot different, maybe not what a lot of people want to hear. I think that people should stop looking so much into things like the Fed minutes and QE and more look at what's taking place within the earnings market. And so I'm going around your question a little bit here, because it's not like I'm looking at the Fed minutes and saying, wow, here comes a stimulus, this is great. Because, you know, if you watch CNBC, everyone says this rally's fake, and, you know, it's all because, you know, we're expecting stimulus out of every place, including, you know, China and Europe, as well as the U.S. But if you're looking at earnings on the earnings front, and I know revenues haven't been that great. I think only 35% of companies beat on revenues, but they did that, and earnings are at record highs right now without help from China and Europe. So companies are doing what they need to do during slower growth times, and they're achieving, you know, great earnings results, which is important. I think, you know, the revenues, again, we haven't seen on the revenues, but when you're looking at, you know, $1.2 trillion in cash on the balance sheets, you're looking at hedge funds totally missing this rally, right? The so-called smart money. I think they're only 43% net long right now, and they're underperforming. If we continue to see this market do well, these guys are going to have to buy stock. So, you know, that could be a catalyst down the road. But getting back to your question here, with the Fed minutes, you know, it's tough to look at it and just look at a sentence and say, wow, holy cow, it looks like they're coming out with QE3, the market's going to go up. Because I'll ask you this question. If they do come out with stimulus, is that going to be a positive for stocks? At least, you know, maybe the first week, but is it really going to be a positive? I mean, aren't we really all sick of stimulus? Don't we realize that, you know, the only reason why they're doing it is because the markets terribly need to stimulate it, and the long-term results could be terrible,
right?
In terms of, you know, huge deficits later on and massive inflation. So I think we got that in our heads where I don't know if a stimulus is going to be great for stocks or if they announce a QE3. It may be good for a week or two, but I think we may come off of that. I don't know.
I would agree with you. I think that the idea of QE is much more of, you know, it's like this fantasy that you want to get because we saw what happened the first one, the second one of the stocks. But the reality is that what does it do? It pushes down the dollar significantly. Okay, so fine. That's better for our exporters. And it's very helpful to combat some of the headwinds that we've seen before. We see that bond yields, I don't know how much lower they're going, you know, where they're going to go. So that's not going to be the thing. As a matter of fact, with the slight tick up of bond interest rates recently, mortgage refinancings and new mortgage applications were really low. I don't think that a QE in the traditional sense of what they did last time would be good, because I think the conversation has come up so many times about how there is so much debt and where are they getting the money from, that it might be looked at on a longer term picture as a negative. And I think I'm in agreement with the Fed that says that we need fiscal policy, not monetary policy at this point, to really do something, because there's some underlying structural issues that are prohibiting the economy to grow.
Well, I could tell you something. I know you get great feedback because you have a widely listened to podcast, and so do I at SNA Investor Podcast. And I hear from a lot of different people, and there's certain trends that I hear all the time. And one of them is that everybody that has a job is working harder than ever. They're all working harder than ever. It's difficult to get a job if you don't have one, but if you have one, they're doing good. Also, I hear from CEOs of businesses that have strong businesses doing well, but they don't want to hire because they don't know what the outlook is. It's so uncertain based on a political front where whether you're a Democrat or – and you're in Florida too. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, I mean they're forcing us to hate the other side right now. If you listen, because Florida is basically up in the air right now. So they're spending a ton of money. Every other commercial is about Romney and Obama, and it's getting to the point where you almost hate the other side, whether you're Republican or Democrat.
Right,
it's
exactly.
So divided right now, and what is it? Single digit approval for Congress, which is a joke. But again, this uncertainty. Let's get a plan. Bank balance sheets are stronger than they've ever been, but yet these banks can't lend money because they don't know what the rules are going to be 2, 3, 5 years down the road. We need to clear this up. Those pipes are really jammed right now. Let's clear them up a little bit, and I think that they'll free up a little bit. Free up capital and be better for stocks in the long term. But you're right. There's just a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the political front. And again, we're just a couple months away from an election.
Well, a couple of things that I want to talk about, because there are some areas to be potentially bullish on. We've seen a lot of stocks get hammered in the June through August period, and then a lot of them came back up a bit. I mean, some of the material companies have been some of the worst sectors. We saw the defensive sectors, like, for example, the telecoms, utilities, et cetera, move up dramatically, then start to roll over, come down on a relative basis. Financials have been just kind of sitting there. They can't decide what they want to do. But the energy companies have been doing very well. Now, I know you follow a lot of energy companies. We've talked about some of them before. We have, give or take, $95, $97 oil at this point. A lot of it is being blamed on the possibility of problems inside of Middle East and Iran and Israel. We have on a commodity front, there's a big question about stockpiling in China. What's your opinion on the material sector in general right now?
Well, starting with oil, I'm just surprised oil prices are this high. I think that we're producing more oil than we've ever produced here. We're less reliant on foreign oil, which is a great thing. So I think prices will come down a little bit. But then, more and more companies are drilling for oil. Why? Because natural gas prices are low. They're also drilling for, liquids too, which are, propane, ethane, more closely tied to related to oil, at least on price. But, there's been so much of a mad rush into that sector that even the liquid prices are down near 10-year lows. So that's not good for natural gas companies, and that's not good for, some of the oil companies. But natural gas, there's so many rigs that have come offline. You have Cheniere Energy about to, hopefully by 2014, the first export terminal. But there was news swept under the radar a little bit that, Exxon, too, just filed for a license to out of Texas with another company, $10 billion project also to export. So this is going to happen pretty soon. And natural gas prices, I think if you could have a really 4 to 5 year outlook and not pay attention to it, I think it may be a good time. I think it's going to be really rough, especially over the next year or two, where you may see natural gas prices jump over $3, maybe $3.50, $3.75. But as soon as you get to that $4 level, there's just so much natural gas that will come back online and rigs come back online that I think will push the price lower until we export. But that's how I feel really about the energy sector. More on materials, if you're looking into gold and silver, the prices to mine have skyrocketed. Unbelievable. It's almost over $1,000 an ounce to produce gold. So, you need those prices high right now. And there's a big shift going on where you're going to see a lot of gold, silver companies, mining companies go out of business, especially in the junior mining space. But it also creates opportunities because a lot of these companies are getting hit down 40, 50, 60% along with the rest of the sector. And they're in much better shape in terms of being fully funded for the next couple of years to find gold and silver.
So when it comes to the energy area, we also talk about coal. Now, the coal companies, Patriot Coal went out of business, and ANR is in big trouble. I mean, the steel companies and all that. What's happening there? What's the big problem there?
Well, with coal, it's simple. It's just low natural gas prices. So, it's just taking demand clearly off the table. You see Patriot Coal go out of business. You're seeing a lot of these companies get hit. You're seeing pricing, metallurgical coal try to recover a little bit. But still, the sector, I think it's tough. I mean, I tried to invest in this sector 6 months ago personally. It didn't work out, and I wound up stopping out for not too big of a loss. But I think you have to wait for an uptick. I think with natural gas prices this low and expect to stay low for the next couple of years, and I'm a believer. You know, I've been, you know, buying stocks under 10, been managing stocks under 10 for such a long time. I think you really have to avoid this. I think until you see some kind of uptick or maybe natural gas prices recover, but as long as natural gas prices are low, you can't touch coal. Steel, on the other end, I like steel. I mean, it's one of the cyclical industries. Again, the economy is growing less than 1%. I'm a believer here, and I think I'm all alone, which makes me kind of more positive. But I think we're going to have it in 2013. I really do. I think that China is near its low. I mean, it went from 12% GDP growth to 7.5%. I know every single problem in China. I've been, you know, I read about them, and it could go a little bit lower. I think Europe is going to get stronger, too. It's going to get better before it gets worse. I mean, does anybody think it's going to get a lot worse? I mean, we are expecting, you know, another bailout for Spain. Greece is going to be gone. Italy's next. I mean, you know, the expectations are so low. And then you look at the U.S. with less than 1% growth. I think 2013 may set up as a pretty good year in terms of economic growth for these countries. And if it does, there's cyclical plays like chemical companies, I think steel companies, even the banks, I think are going to do well in 2013. But, you know, we'll see. That's just my opinion.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that when you say that, a lot of people would say, well, okay, great, but what about this fiscal cliff situation? You know, how is that going to affect things? And, of course, we may or may not have a new president or whatever. You know, the fact is, I do agree with you that generally speaking, that U.S. companies have been able to, U.S. companies have been able to hold on pretty well. And even in times when they've been very much hit hard, they seem to figure out a way to recover, or at least reasonably recover, right? But what about this fiscal cliff and what's going on there? And what's your commentary with that?
It's not a 2013 problem. It's a problem that's going to impact our kids, guaranteed. I think that we have to come up with solutions. I think, yeah, it's going to be painful, just like, you know, Ryan's plan. Does it make everybody happy? No. I mean, we're going to have massive cuts. We're seeing governments, you know, local governments, you know, go bankrupt. You're seeing, you know, Warren Buffett get out of municipals now. So it's going to be tough. It really is. But I think it's more, you know, 5 year plus out. You know what I mean? At least we're able to restructure with low interest rates and restructure our debt. But I do think that it's more of a longer term problem. I think that you have to worry more than 5 years out. But it's not a 2013, 2014 problem. I just don't see those massive deficits coming in. And plus, of course, that's, you know, a big impact is who's going to get elected, which, you know, I believe Obama's going to get elected. I really do. I don't think that Romney's going to be in. You know, the Republicans are going to get in. But it's going to be interesting to see what takes place. And do we go towards natural gas? Do we push natural gas? I mean, we can become the Saudi Arabia of natural gas and you know, be exporting natural gas to China and Europe. I mean, we have 300-400 year supplies if you really go into it. I mean, it's a massive amount of supplies. It's just, why aren't we exporting this? Why isn't it being done sooner? How many jobs would be created? I mean, the amount of money. Look at Texas, oil state, great shape, right? So imagine that we're able to export natural gas and we really push this initiative. Who knows what's going to happen to the fiscal cliff later, depending on what, you know, what laws are passed on a political front. So it's hard to say, but it's not really a short-term problem.
But it's back to the same thing again, Frank. It's back to the whole idea of that markets have been so much led by politics and policy and around the world. And I don't know if I remember a time that it was this extreme. Do you?
No, not this extreme. You know, the biggest killer was how Obama saved basically the auto industry. Because did it work? Yes. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, did it work? Yes. And that's going to be a problem because it seems like they're never going to let any industry fail now. Because they said, hey, you know, this is what we did and it worked. And here's a blueprint. And we can get away with it. And even with our banking system, too. So it seems like they're going to be more hands-on, which, you know, I'm with you. I mean, free markets, you know, let companies fail. Let, you know, Patriot Coal's gone. Let them go. ATP Oil and Gas just filed for bankruptcy. I mean, you need bankruptcies, and other people are going to take market share. Look at Apple and look at what they're doing to, you know, Research in Motion, Dell, Hewlett-Packard. So, you know, that's the market at work, but it just seems like these guys, when things get really bad, they're going to be quick to enter the market. And yeah, I've never seen it this bad.
Yeah, and also, you know, you mentioned that they're not going to let anything fail in the, you know, success of the auto industry. You know, I mean, there is success, but there's a big cost. You know, we did, in fact, I think it's $50 billion at this point with the price of where GM is. And, you know, if you look at the stock itself, it's not a successful stock from where they rescued it, how much money they put into it, et cetera. But that's another whole discussion. You know, but I do agree with you. I think we both agree with the fact that it would be nicer, you know, if we could have a free market. But we don't right now. So that's just the way things are. And the fact is that, you know, there are, you know, there are different things happening. The one thing, though, just to get back to something, you know, the Shanghai Index recently hit about a 2009 low, while our stock market is kind of getting towards, or was towards, you know, about a four-year high. Now, the difference between the two is that Shanghai and China, they're trying to really slow down their economy, just like India and a few other places. And we're trying to, you know, keep interest rates as low as possible, theoretically, go negative if we can. So there is some influence from the Fed on the stocks, right? I mean, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, you know, there's much more inflation in China than there is here, especially in the home building market, construction market. So, yeah, they're much more worried about inflation, where there is inflation here, but the statistics we look at show that there's no inflation. So we're going to keep interest rates lower, probably much, much, much lower than they've ever been. And we're going to see massive inflation one day. Low interest rates almost always results in that, unless you're Japan. But in the U.S., it has. And I think, you know, it's just the same, the market playing all over again like it did 2002, 2003, when we lowered rates. We kept them low for, you know, a considerable amount of time at 1%. Look what happened. We created a huge housing bubble, and we all know how that ended up. Now we've been at zero for how long? It's just a matter of time before we see it. It's just a matter of when.
Mm. Well, a lot of people like to hear about the stocks that you're thinking about, sectors. Let's talk about some that are really hitting your eye. I mean, you know, we talk about some sectors, maybe just generally some stocks. You don't have to give me your favorite at the moment, but what's kind of looking really interesting to you?
Two stocks, I don't know if I mentioned them, but Steel Dynamics is one of the ones I have in my portfolio, pay a nice dividend. I do think that they have the newest equipment, the highest margins in the business, and if we do see a rotation into cyclicals from like the defensive names, which have, you know, been fantastic right now, I think that's one that will go higher. Huntsman, another one, the chemical company, a lot of debt there, but none of that debt is due anytime soon. I think it's a fantastic buy. It's, they've, you know, blew out the numbers three quarters in a row. So I think that company is relatively cheap here. Those are two companies I'm looking at. Other companies, looking at Apple, and Apple looks fantastic here. I don't know if I'd buy Apple here, but one thing I did notice is, you know, Cisco. You know, you look at Cisco and how, you know, the company jumped up when they raised their dividend, but it's almost like the white flag of, hey, you know, we're no longer a technology company, we're a utility company, you know? So it's amazing where you have Apple, which is a company that grows itself organically, has over $100 billion in cash, and people say, well, what are you going to do with that cash? And they use a little bit of it, you know, to initiate a dividend and buy back stock. But, you know, they haven't – you don't see Apple make those mistakes like the huge write-downs we saw with Microsoft, $6 billion for Aquantive. You have, just massive write-downs across the whole entire sector, whatever company, go ahead and choose. But you don't see that with Apple, which is incredible how they're using their cash. So I love companies that are using their cash organically, not to saying that raising their dividends and buying back stocks are great or not good. I just rather see you, not everybody can follow the Oracle model. So, you know, a large technology front, I wait for a further pullback in Apple, and I also like Oracle. I like Microsoft as well, but I'd probably stay away from Cisco. I think that a company can't really grow its revenue, so I really don't like Cisco here.
One of the things about Cisco that I noticed when they put out that dividend, it was almost like they were setting up for a new share buyback. Because a lot of times companies will come out and they will do a dividend increase, a significant one, do a share buyback so that essentially it's a no-cost item for them. Do you think that's maybe what's in line?
I don't know what's in line. I know that if you're looking at buybacks, and they did a recent study on this, and I forgot who did. I wish I could give them all the credit in the world. But when it comes to buybacks, it only works out when they – I think they did a study for the S&P 500 companies that it only worked out for 35% of the companies. If you're looking at buybacks, a lot of that has to do with companies, you know, they have earnings expectations. And Cisco probably would have missed earnings if they didn't buy back stock. So you look at ExxonMobil buying back tens of billions of stock almost – you know, every single year dating back to, you know, whatever, 10, 15 years. Imagine what you could have done with that cash. Imagine, you know, when you have those write-downs too, people say, well, it's not a big deal. It's a write-down of goodwill. It's $6 billion Microsoft wrote down where they could have bought into, you know, like the big data space, cloud computing. They could have did so much more with. So it is a big deal. You know, it didn't really hurt the stock price, but it is a big deal when these companies had their write-downs. It means that you have very poor management. You made a huge, huge mistake when it turns to, you know, looking to grow your business, and it turned out to be wrong.
So the with the buybacks, you know, you also have to look at IBM. IBM has one of the most incredible and incredibly aggressive buybacks in history. I mean, they pretty much have taken the company private. And if you look at the trend of what they've done, they've basically increased their earnings because of less shares outstanding significantly over the last number of years because of this. Have you ever noticed that and looked at that?
And IBM's, yeah, one of the biggest buybacks. They buy back their stock. One of the reasons probably Warren Buffett invested in, along with, you know, big data. I mean, people who don't understand big data, start getting involved in this trend. There's a lot of expensive stocks in there, but there was a story which is remarkable, New York Times. I'll spend like 30 seconds on this, where Target actually was sending coupons to a 15 or 17-year-old, 16-year-old girl, whatever. And it was, you know, for baby furniture and all kinds of baby stuff. So the father saw it, went to Target and said, you know, you're crazy. Why are you doing this for? You know, my daughter's not pregnant. Stop. It's a bad influence. And a week later, he found out his daughter was pregnant.
Whoa.
And Target knew this because of their analyzing all these trends and these spending habits of, you know, hundreds of thousands of women. And they could determine by what certain things they buy that they might think they're pregnant. It's not so easy as a pregnancy test, but it's just certain items like certain creams, and they filter her in. But there's a massive trend going on with big data where they're analyzing using algorithms to predict future behavior. So every single company in the world's on this trend right now. This is the biggest focus right now. I think bigger than cloud computing, and there's a lot of companies involved. IBM's on the forefront of it, and you see why the company's done so well.
First of all, that's scary as can be.
Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Think about it. You have Twitter and you have Facebook, right? Facebook, everyone wants to say, you know, how terrible the stock's doing. They have nearly a billion users, right? 13% of the population has a Facebook account. Now, you look at them, and what do people do on Facebook? They tell you exactly what they like to do, where they're at. You know, they say, hey, you know, I like this, great story. I mean, now throw all of that data into marketing companies and they're filtering through real-time algorithms. I mean, think about trading. I would trade, you know, a tenth of a second. And they're saying, hey, you know, maybe we could offer specials. This person usually goes here on a certain date and it sends coupons. But the marketing landscape is going to change forever just based on big data, because everybody's posting so much of their personal information on these social networking sites.
And I wonder if that's going to stop, because I saw a special a couple of nights ago. This is very interesting, that the police departments are now using Facebook as a way to find people, because they can then link certain people to their friends and find out, and then they can locate people. So if, and I don't know if they have unlimited access, you know, and they can see somebody's profile page and all that even if it's private. But there was an interesting discussion about several different police departments that are using Facebook as a place to find people that they were looking for, and how efficient it has become. And if that kind of thing happens, and the people, you know, listen, most people that I think are probably under the age of, I don't know, I'll say 20 something, they don't really know the ramifications of, because it's never been, of releasing all your information. I mean, just, you know, puking up every single thing that you do, where you go and all that. There was something we used to think of called Big Brother, right? Remember Big Brother? You know, this is Big Brother. I mean, I'm not saying Facebook is doing this. I'm saying the potential for Big Brother to be watching and to understand. Now, the problem with the Target story that you just said was, does that mean that Target was actually recording the purchases of this particular individual, maybe on their Target card? And then that's a personal invasion of privacy.
Yeah, I guess, but you know, credit, and it's not just online. I mean, this happened to be like credit cards, and you know, they'll see, hey, this person bought this, 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 and this. You know, basically do credit card purchases, and that's simple. But it's not just online. It's more like, you know, utility companies finding out, you know, how much money is spent or when certain people are in their houses. Again, when you're filtering all this data in, and you have massive outages like in what we saw in India or even New York City, people who live there, where, you know, they're always worried, saying, oh, wow, you know, you got to worry about, you know, we could have a massive outage when you see, you know, temperature rise above 95 degrees. Well, when you're analyzing, you know, different trends and seeing what type of people, what houses, where they're actually using the most electricity, maybe they spend vacations, and you're filtering all this, you know, they create certain meters, you know, just to it's all like smart stuff that's taking place. It's, you know, you mentioned the police before. Not only that, they're able to detect where meth labs are actually, you know, based on who they're arresting, how they're arresting, what areas they're in. They're able to pinpoint exactly where meth labs is. Again, incredible stuff. I'm sure if you Google it, you'll probably start reading stuff for 5, 6, 7 hours. And believe me, there's a lot of good stock picks within the big data space that are a little expensive, but very still early in this trend that I think is really the future of marketing and the future where business is going. And it's every CEO would tell you the same thing.
Interesting. So let's kind of segue over for a second and talk a little bit about, you know, the end of the year, kind of the trends, some of the things that we're seeing here, bonds. What's your take on bonds right now? I mean, You know, there's a lot of players out there that say, oh, we're in the biggest bond bubble ever. You know, it seems pretty reasonable to say that, right? But meanwhile, bonds come down a little bit. Yes, the 10-year went from a 145 or so to like 180, came back a bit. You know, after the Fed came out with their minutes, everybody was thinking, oh my gosh, it's going to be something. So they just piled back into bonds again. Can we exist in an area where both stocks go up and they're being bought, commodities go up, gold and precious metals go up, and I don't know what I missed, but the stocks go up, all of them together, bond stocks, can it all go up at the same time?
They'll all go up at the same time, but I want to focus on one thing that you said, which I thought was pretty cool, is that, you know, when you said, it seems like, I mean, you know, you could almost, I don't know if you used the word, obviously, that, you know, bonds seem like to be in a bubble, and I bet you if we had this conversation a year from now, you would have said the same thing. At least I've heard that from everybody, including myself, saying, wow, you got to be crazy to be buying bonds here. But, you know, with interest rates as low as they are and expected to stay low, at least according to the Fed, through 2014, probably a lot longer, man, it just, I think the better option is just buying Microsoft with a 3% yield here. You know, I think eventually people are going to say, should I continue to buy bonds or these big money managers, or you know, is it better to buy McDonald's? Is it better to buy Microsoft? Is it better to buy, you know, the Ciscos or maybe Con Ed or utility companies yielding like, you know, 3%, 4%, 5% that are safer companies? And I think we've seen this rush into this sector already. I mean, it's amazing. Look at the utilities, how great they perform. They're not supposed to perform this good. You're supposed to buy utility companies and it's supposed to, you know, move 5% to 10% a year and give you, you know, a nice steady dividend when these things are up 25% in a 6-month stretch, which is pretty crazy. So you're seeing that trend right now, but man, when you look at different asset classes, and I don't want to sound like a crazy bull here because I'm not. I'm just bullish on certain stocks. It just seems like, you know, the stock market, you can't find a better asset class right now than stocks. You know, especially if you're looking for conservative investors, for retirees, opposed to where you're going to find interest these days. And it just makes it so difficult, almost forcing you to buy equities right now. I mean, the housing market is attractive too, but, you know, it's not liquid. You got to keep your money there for a long time. It just seems like more money is going to flow into stocks compared to bonds. I just can't see people buying bonds here. But again, I couldn't see it a year ago.
No, I hear you. Well, and again, you know, we have a bond component for our portfolios, for our global allocations, and we're thrilled with them. As a matter of fact, some of the emerging market bonds have been just on fire, and they're just doing beautifully. And even though there was a little bit of a move up of bonds last month or so, they're just doing fine. But how about this as another discussion? You know, there's big question about, okay, you know, mutual fund managers are at a kind of record low, or maybe not record low, but they're pretty low on cash. And yes, hedge funds are underinvested, and okay, that's something. And usually they would leverage up, and they're not even, you know, near that. But you know what? I have this kind of strange thought that the possibility of money exiting other countries is one of the reasons that into the U.S. equity markets is something also that's holding things up and helping to fuel a rally regardless of the world situation. Because if the world situation falls down, you know, usually it's like a small cap, large cap discussion. The small caps will get much more hit. Well, the emerging markets will be hit much more. So maybe there's money coming out of that area in anticipation saying, hey, you know what? If we're going to be allocated to equities, we might as well take U.S. at this point.
And I definitely agree with that. I mean, I've talked to people, wealthy individuals that actually said, you know, that they're not investing in emerging markets, a little too risky. And they're investing here and they're pulling money out of Europe. But, you know, the U.S. is the safest place to invest right now. I mean, we have a Fed that's almost backing everything, just like you said at the beginning of our conversation with the Fed minutes. And not only that, we have, you know, record earnings, record cash on the balance sheet. So, you know, these companies are doing well. Not every company is going to be doing well. We went from, you know, trading at 12 times earnings on the S&P 500 about maybe like two and a half months ago to now it's like 14, 13 and a half. But you're still going to find stocks that trade like 10, 11 times earnings in the S&P 500 that pay good yields, that you know, and those forward earnings that are positive. So I think you are going to find a lot of ideas. And one more point I want to make to you is it's interesting, and I know you follow a lot of stocks too. You're seeing a lot of separation for the first time. And like maybe I want to say that for the first time in like 5 years where, you know, Home Depot was great and Lowe's was bad. Right. Western great, Seagate not so great. So you're seeing, it's not like, all right, here's the industry, just buy everything in this industry. You're seeing a lot of separation where, you know, the good companies are outperforming the companies not so good in their sector, which is really cool because it makes it more of a stock picker's market.
I agree with you. And you know, but the overriding trend does help, but I agree with you. You know, the one thing that's really, I found very interesting has been the how wrong it seemingly, how wrong analysts have been and how stocks have reacted during earnings season. I mean, you've seen some wacky moves. You know, Green Mountain was up 30-something percent after the earnings came out. You've seen, you know, just weird, crazy moves of epic proportions, you know, because what we found is that the analysts have just obviously dropped down their analyst expectations and all that, and then they come in and beat. But I agree with you on the separation discussion, totally. One thing I want to ask you, though, is this is a bigger question, but I'll just relate it to Apple for a second. Apple comes out with their earnings and, you know, disappointed. There's no question about that initially, right?
Totally.
And then they not only disappoint, but they guide lower and they kind of explain why that is. At the same time, we're seeing that other companies in the same sector are not doing so well. Look at Dell, you know, and like an HP or whatever. I mean, just generally speaking, it's just not been a good environment for them. But yet, 3 days after the, I don't know, the minor dip of 3% of Apple, the stock goes on to just pretty much be up almost every single day. And when it starts to come down, the next day it turns around the other way again. I mean, are investors ignoring the expectations from Apple? Do they think that Apple's sandbagging? Apple knew that they were going to possibly be announcing a TV or a new iPhone or a new this or that. They knew that when they made the conversation, you know, had the conversation. So what is it that's driving all this?
You know, it's kind of funny you ask that because I think there's like 55 analysts. There's either 55, 56, 57 around there, analysts that cover Apple. And they came out with, no doubt, a horrible quarter. And you know how many companies downgraded? Zero. I think there might have been one, like a boutique researcher. I forgot their name. Nobody downgraded. Everyone said, oh, you know, we expected this. And all I was thinking is like, if you expected this and you said, you know, everyone held off and waited for the iPhone 5, then how come you didn't put that in your numbers if you expected it, you know? But I just thought that was kind of funny with the analysts. But it's clear that, you know, you look at Apple, one, it's still relatively cheap, trading at 13 times earnings. They have catalysts. That's what you like to see with growth stocks. They have, you know, new iPad coming out, iPhone 5 coming out. You're looking at, hey, what's their balance sheet? You know, over $100 billion. I mean, to put that in perspective, that's probably a bigger market cap than 450 companies in the S&P 500. That's how much cash they have. So when you're looking at all those details, plus you throw in an environment that's really difficult right now, people are like, well, you know what? I'd rather own Apple, a growth company at 13 times earnings, growing those earnings, still growing those earnings, you know, north of 30% expected to, and they have new products coming out. So, you know, can they sustain this? I don't know. I mean, we've seen in the past every company that hits a $500 billion market cap, you know, it turns out to be Microsoft and Cisco. It pulls back. This company went right to a $600 billion mm-hmm. market cap. So mm-hmm. it's remarkable. But the one positive I saw where I didn't see really what Microsoft, I didn't see what Cisco at this level, is Apple is eating everybody's lunch.
Yeah,
they're
no,
killing
yeah, no
the
question.
Company. Nobody's buying Hewlett Packard. Nobody's buying Dell. Nobody's buying Research in Motion. Probably going to be out of business. Actually destroying, and not little competitors. These were big giants. And just completely taking away all that market share for them, which is remarkable. So I could see why people are buying it so much. And you know, with the catalyst coming up, you know, and along with the market and how it is and the safety issues, I could see why so many people are pouring into Apple.
Yeah, no, I would tend to agree with you that there's obviously, again, it's, you know, would you rather invest in a company that has a clean balance sheet, no debt outstanding, a little bit of a dividend, or buy a bond of a country that has, you know, $16 trillion of debt, unsure about, I mean, put the country, the United States, as a company, would you buy that company?
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah. So, you know, you absolutely. So, you know, and plus, you know, you're looking at Apple, again, when you see, you know, just a small deal, you just compare it. You say, what would you rather buy? And not even like an emerging market bond, but even bonds here. Like, what would you rather buy? Wouldn't you rather buy like an Apple trading at, you know, 12, 13 times forward earnings, catalyst, and growing, wouldn't you rather invest in that than earn 0% in your money market account or, you know, interest rates and checking accounts and, you know, hardly anything in treasury. So, you know, you are seeing a lot of money, and I believe that's why you're seeing Apple where it is right now. Who knows if it goes higher? I thought it might have been done at, like, you know, 650, and now it keeps going 660,
yeah,
670.
I hear you.
So we'll see how high it goes. I don't know. You could tell the people about technicals more on your level, but
well, wow, the technicals are gone. There's nothing left. There's nothing to look at. It's over the top. So you can't really, you know, there's no technicals to look at. You know, there's no resistance here. It's, you know, it became last week when it went over the top of its all-time high, it became a point where now you have to build a new technical. I mean, there is some, listen, if you want to get really technical and you want to, put Apple out of the discussion because people get flustered when you say anything about Apple that's not like great. The fact is the chart looks like it's working on what's called an exhaustion run, which is kind of the last group it gets in, and they just say, oh my God, I got to get into this already. It's going up. It's not coming back. And they just kind of ramp it almost parabolically up for a few days, and then it just takes a giant move, and then that's it. But I'm not saying that's happening, but it's that from a chart standpoint, that's the only thing I could think of. But anyway, Frank Curzio, Steel Dynamics Huntsman, we talk about that. Steel Dynamics, now, are they, real quickly, are they the recyclers, or is that the...
Recycling business.
They're in the recycling,
right? Recycling business has... I tried to invest in recycling companies and got nailed. I got stopped out in the companies. I think it's a fantastic business because... You know, we're seeing more cell phones and, you know, the recycling laws are passing in every single state. I was just way, way too early on this trend, something to look at. But they do have a recycling business, but it's not a significant part of their revenue. So I think that they're going to see more stronger demand on the steel side, which they are. And the last quarter's estimates were pretty good. If you look at their earnings estimates, it's supposed to rise sharply off of depressed numbers over the next 2 years. So I really like Steel Dynamics here, especially with that dividend, because you get paid to wait.
Great. Well, you have a great podcast, of course. You can grab that on iTunes. We'll put links to that on the show notes. And, of course, he has his various pieces that he writes, the newsletters that he writes for Stansberry Research, the Stocks Under 10 and the Special Situations, and great stuff that he writes about that finds that digs out of from somewhere. He finds these unbelievable opportunities. So I want to thank you very much for joining us.
I really appreciate it.
Hey, Frank, you be well. Well, that's going to do it. Wrap it up. Lots talked about today. I mean, lots of things to really ponder and think about. And, you know, if you haven't gotten your an earful from us today on all the different stocks that Frank mentioned and some of the things that I mentioned, as well as the economy, obviously, one thing I do want to tell you, probably one of the best things that you can do these days is stay away from what I call headline-driven euphoria and panic. The headlines that come out and the way they're designed to pull you in are really getting to be atrocious. I mean, they don't often relate to the things that they're really supposed to be talking about. And, you know, it looks like there's a new breed of writers out there that are really young and haven't had any experience beyond the last 5 years. And all they can talk about is stimulus, and all they can talk about is the same thing over and over. So kind of do me a favor and pick what you're reading, the people that you're listening to. Just be careful because, you know, the ones that are either perma bulls, perma bears, or, you know, kind of have their axe to grind. I mean, you look at the some of the gang on, I don't want to mention the television station, but it's like the same thing over and over and over again. And what's the point? What are you learning? You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, I thank you for joining me. Do me a favor. Please leave a comment on iTunes. Go over to iTunes and click on not just the rating, but the comment, the section where you can write up a little bit of a review. I'd really appreciate it. And if you want to get your 14 days of free trigger point alert, if you haven't done it already, we should see some of the things that we just closed, some of the trades that just closed. Pretty cool. Anyway, triggerpointresearch.com. And you just go /free trial, triggerpointresearch.com/free trial. Thanks for joining me. Talk to you soon. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.